Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies. You can study a variety of topics such as creative writing, human rights, and the arts. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How healthful is your media consumption? Do you regularly nourish your brain with high-quality, bias-free information about the world? And do you seek out a variety of different sources to ensure you're getting a balanced perspective? And what is the consequence to us as individuals and as a society if we end up ignoring what's going on around us to gorge on print, broadcast, and online content? My guest this hour believes it is just as important to seek moderation in what we read, watch, and listen to as what we eat and drink. Clay A. Johnson is founder of Blue State Digital, the company responsible for Barack Obama's 2008 online presidential campaign. His new book is called The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Clay, welcome to Think.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So how is our media consumption problem like our obesity problem?
Well, you know, the premise of the information diet is who wants to hear the truth when they can hear that they're right? I mean, I certainly don't. I hate hearing when I'm wrong. And when I hear that I'm right, it's like an intoxicant. I mean, it feels great. I think we have now a media culture that is really built around creating affirmation networks rather than information networks. And so you get into this problem, I think, societally, where if everybody's views are confirmed, then you can't really have synthesis of ideas. You can't really have democracy. If I am tuning into MSNBC every night and listening to Rachel Maddow affirm all of my beliefs, and my Uncle Warren is doing the same thing on Fox News, listening to Bill O'Reilly confirm his beliefs, then my Uncle Warren and I are never going to synthesize great ideas.
You know, go ahead.
No, after you.
Well, I was going to say, it was fascinating to be reading this book over the past week when we had this very controversial story about Planned Parenthood and Susan G. Komen. And I was on Facebook, and I have groups of friends with different, very different political ideas. And to go on the pages of some of them gave you one impression of how the entire country felt about all this. And to go on the pages of others could give you an entirely different perspective. And if you didn't make an effort to go to both, you would be half wrong.
It's actually interesting, you know, if you take a look at Susan G. Komen and the Planned Parenthood, you know, what my book says is, look, go straight to the sources and, like, figure out using data what ideas are, because the more processed information is, the more likely you've got it wrong. It's sort of like, you know, when we were all kids sitting around the school cafeteria playing that game of telephone or operator where, you know, one kid whispers in the person to their left's ear, I like chocolate, and it goes all the way around the circle, and it comes out the other end saying, Clay eats worms. Not that I'm a victim or anything like that, but the same thing sort of happens with media. And with Komen and Planned Parenthood, you know, I actually wrote a blog post about this on my website last week. If you take a look at the amount of money, first off, the Susan G. Komen Foundation was talking about, it was really about 1% of Planned Parenthood, the Planned Parenthood Federation of America's money. But then the other part of it is that we're also talking about pass-through grants on both sides, right? So if you're giving money to the Susan G. Komen Foundation, what they do is, you know, they're not giving money directly through directly to Planned Parenthood. They give money to some other organization who gives money to Planned Parenthood. And so you as a donor, you're actually paying three administrative taxes on that, right? You're paying the administrative tax for the Susan G. Komen Foundation, then you're paying the administrative tax for that pass-through organization, then you're paying the administrative tax for, you know, the overhead for Planned Parenthood to provide services to women. And my conclusion is, if you're really interested in women's health and you want your money to have the most impact, then you need to find a local Planned Parenthood chapter and give your money directly to them. And that's the sort of tragic part about that argument is when we get in these heated debates, it's very hard to think critically. And that's what I mean, I think, by information obesity, is we get sucked into these arguments that actually don't make a lot of sense.
And when you talk about information overload, you say that it's different from information overconsumption. Talk about why you think that's such a critical distinction.
Well, I don't think information overload exists. It's like saying that obesity is caused by food overload. there's one thing that's not at fault in obesity's in the obesity epidemic, and that's food. Now, it could be the food manufacturers, the food producers, the food consumers, and overeaters, but it's certainly not food, because chickens are not slaughtering themselves, frying themselves, and then reanimating themselves and flying into people's mouths. I have yet to see that happen.
I don't want to be there to see that happen.
Right. The idea that that we can blame information for information overload is just the same as blaming food for food overload. It really has to do with how our information and how our media is being produced, and how much of it we're consuming and what of it we're consuming. In the book I talk a lot about that, but the one critical distinction I want to make clear is that just like a regular diet, a food diet, an information diet isn't really about the quantity of your intake. You rarely find people that are morbidly obese because they're eating too much broccoli. I think the same thing is with information. It's really about the quality of information that you're taking in. It was originally, I was trying to steal from Michael Pollan, it's what's in the book, but Michael Pollan in Defense of Food says, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, and I say read, not too much, mostly facts. But I really think it's seek information, not comfort, and not too much is really the point of the book, and to consume deliberately. That's the other part I think that's really dangerous about information compared to food, is that our consumption of information is very passive. We do it when we're sitting down at tables, on couches, or at desks, and we don't really think about being deliberate consumers of Facebook, or really deliberate consumers of television. It just sort of comes at us.
And yet we're doing this for hours and hours of every day.
11 hours a day. which is
and we're awake for what, 16, 18? Yeah.
Right. So it's basically enough time to take a shower and start consuming information.
Why are we so hardwired to want to seek information all the time, whether good or bad? And we'll talk more about the ways to figure out what's good and what's not so healthy for us. But if there's an evolutionary reason why we want to soak up information all the time.
Well, yeah. I mean, evolutionary speaking, I mean, you can take evolution, you can say it's about evolution, you can say it's about culture, but, our ability to acquire information, process it, store it, has been key to our survival for thousands of years. It's, a lot of historians think that it was our ability to speak language, the first IT boom really was our development of language, was the thing that allowed humans to organize and migrate beyond the continent of Africa. It was the scribes that and their ability to read and write and process information that allowed the Egyptians to have a giant forward-thinking empire. I think the information technology boom in America has allowed it to hold its position in the world for so long. And I think these things are evidence that our ability to process information are as distinctly tied to our survival as our ability to eat food is. And if you think about it, it makes sense, because I'd be hard pressed to find people who can last very long without the ability really to communicate in some way. Helen Keller has this her biography has this great passage, it's in my book, about the moment that she discovered language. And she wasn't young when she discovered language, so she was, her brain was old enough to remember it.
Mm-hmm.
And she said it was like, it wasn't just that she discovered the word, it was that she discovered thinking, that she discovered her own consciousness. And I think that's really important. And that's why I say that, you know, we don't really need food, water, and shelters to survive. We need food, water, shelter, and information in order to survive.
What happens to our brains as we take in ever greater amounts of information without maybe carefully filtering it for quality?
Well, our brains change. We have, you know, it used to be thought that our brains weren't very pliable after we turned 25. But now we know that every time we learn something new, it results in a physiological change in our heads. And science isn't particularly clear on what those changes are, what they mean. You know, the brain is sort of the next great frontier of science, I think. But we do know that you know, for instance, cab drivers in London, when they have enlarged hippocampuses. I gracefully got around pluralizing hippocampus in the book.
Hippocampi.
I don't know whether it's hippocampi or hippocampuses. But they do that because they have that because in London, it's actually, they can't use a GPS to mm-hmm. take people from point A to point B. They've got to pass a huge exam to test their navigational skills. And the hippocampus is the region of the brain that is, in fact, in charge of your navigational skills and your spatial reasoning. And I think that's something that's really interesting. Maybe, you know, our brains are so plastic that we change them. When you look about that in politics, you start going, hey, wait a minute, if I'm watching a lot of Fox News, is it more difficult for me to change my mind? Mm-hmm. Same with MSNBC. It's not like any partisan... any side of the partisan spectrum claims a better ability to tell the truth or see the facts. I do not think that they do.
You write candidly about your experience with the Howard Dean campaign in 2004, during which you and many of your colleagues failed to recognize his downward trajectory based on the information that you were all consuming together. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, I think part of it was hope, right? You know, mm-hmm. everybody in Boston last night thought that, you know, Tom Brady was going to be able to pull it off in the last 48 seconds when I think anybody rationally would go, you know, the Giants have pretty much locked up this game. But another part of it was, you know, we thought he was going to win even though the data was saying that he wasn't long before the Iowa caucuses. And it's because in the morning, you know, our diet was of news clips about how Howard Dean was so great. And then we'd write blog posts to each other about how Howard Dean was so great. And then we'd watch The West Wing at night, which was about how great Howard Dean was going to be. You know, when the pollster came up to us and said, you know, John Kerry was going to win Iowa, we thought he was a crazy person. Mm. When in fact he was the only person there who had all the facts and was thinking rationally.
And do you think that's a pretty common effect for a lot of floundering campaigns?
Oh, in politics? Yeah. I mean, Washington, D.C. is the nonsense industrial complex capital of the world. You have to. On a campaign, you have to basically, you know, it's a lot like love. You have to throw rationality out of the window in order to make sense of it all. And to give it your best. I think politics is the same way. You have to really give everything you can to a candidate in order to survive.
Clay A. Johnson is my guest. He's founder of Blue State Digital and author of the new book, The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. We'd love to hear what you think about this. Give us a call at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Clay A. Johnson, founder of Blue State Digital and author of the new book, The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Join our conversation by calling in to 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. Clay, I would think most of us would not like to think of ourselves living in this echo chamber of like-minded people. How do we fall into that without realizing it?
Well, I think everybody does because we're sort of wired to. You know, I think we need affirmation and we need fear in order to survive, or at least we have in the past. And if you think about what media is providing to us, it's usually those two things, at least large national media is. But more than that, it sort of seeps up on us in different ways. So, for instance, your Google search results and your clicks on websites, they're all votes. You know, one thing I say constantly that for people to realize is that their clicks have consequences. Right now, for instance, I'm looking at Chartbeat. Chartbeat's a service that's plugged into my website that allows me to, in real time, see what's going on informationdiet.com. And I'm actually able to see this radio station's effect of what's happening on my website in real time. And so those people are, to an extent, voting right now. Your listeners are voting for content that's going on my website because I can see what it is that they're clicking on. That's right, I'm watching you, listeners. And so now I know, okay, so this piece of content is something that they're interested in. I should read, or I should write more about that stuff. And so, you know, this phenomenon explains what's happening, you know, over on the Huffington Post, over on the right-hand side of the Huffington Post, where it's about basically kittens and Kardashians all the time. but what's interesting about this is because your clicks and because your Google searches and all that stuff have consequences, that means that your information diet actually affects mine in a much more ethical way, or it has a much more significant ethical consequence, I think, than even our food diets do, because it's immediate and it's tracked and it's measured. Over at the Huffington Post, every morning their editors are instructed to check out what people are searching for on Google and to write more stories about those things. And so, you know, the interesting consequence that this has about journalism, on journalism, is that no one is searching for the Pentagon Papers, right? No one was searching for the Pentagon Papers. And so investigative journalism begins to break down as fiduciary responsibility is the number one thing that's responsible, or that's influencing our journalism. You know, quality journalism is just market inefficiency to these guys. And so that's how it seeps up on us, is, you know, when media is giving us only what it is that we want to hear, it's very, very dangerous. But the good news is that we are empowered. There's no conspiracy here. The media is not, my book actually leads with a quote from Steve Jobs, who said something to the equivalent of this. I'm paraphrasing, but you know, when you're young, you think that there's a conspiracy that the networks have conspired to dumb us down. But when you get a little older, you figure out that that's actually not the way it is at all. In fact, they're just giving people what it is that they want. There is no conspiracy, and that's far more depressing, because with a conspiracy, you can at least shoot the bastards. and I think that that, you know, the good news is that so there actually is a choice that consumers can make, and this is why I'm framing it in the way of a diet, is that if we start dieting, then we can actually make a huge difference in the way that media is being provided to us, because media chases after us. We don't chase after media.
Let's talk a little bit more about heavily processed information, because there are sort of three levels. There is, you know, go straight to the horse's mouth and look at the documents that a news report was based on. You can listen to the news report, or on that third level that is perhaps most troubling, is people talking about the journalism that other people have done based on the documents that those journalists have read.
Right. There's a favorite example from the information diet is the AP ran a story about the Iowa straw poll last year that said the exact subject headline was something like AP colon economic woes weigh factor in Iowa straw poll.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the AP story. Now Fox News took that AP story, put it on its website under a different headline, and that headline was AP colon Barack Obama has big problem with white women.
It's a very different headline.
It's a very different headline. Now, why was that headline made? That headline was made because Fox News knew that it wasn't to, you know, run a character assassination on Barack Obama. It's because Fox News knows that its readers will click on that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more sensational. And it makes them more money. This kind of processing, right, every step down the chain, someone else is thinking, okay, well, how can I, you know, further sensationalize this, or how can I make this more interesting to my viewers by maybe skewing the headline or maybe skewing the facts a little bit. That gets to be a problem. But also, you know, there's the non-nefarious stuff, which is actually a little more dangerous, which is that human beings make mistakes. We are not perfect creatures. And so the further away from the source you get, the more close to, or the more likely you're going to have errors. You know, just like the more people that work on a problem, the less the more likely it is to be erroneous, because you've got more people in there having the ability to make a mistake. And so as that, you know, again, it's that game of telephone where people mishear things, people intentionally skew the facts, or people just make dumb mistakes, and all of a sudden we don't know what the truth is, which is why I think a core part of the information diet is to try and get as close to the source as possible and avoid highly processed information. And that also means, you know, to go local. It means to flip your news diet on its head and to start with the local news, start with the really local news, the news that's happening in your house, rather than the news that's happening in your world.
Hmm.
You know, that some people are more concerned with the goings on of Barack Obama than their own spouse is troubling to me, and I wish that would change. So I say start reading the newspaper of your household first, and end with, you know, reading what's going on with the country.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's speak with Cameron in Dallas. Hi, Cameron.
Hi. I had a question for your author about especially when we're talking about changing your information diet, and I would classify I am a Democrat, and where I'm a devout listener to KERA and a member, but I also tend to read like Huffington Post, more left-leaning journals, and my boyfriend is a Republican, so he'll bring home editorials from the Wall Street Journal, or we'll compare different shows we've listened to, and it always seems like when we walk away from an article or we're discussing it, I can only see my left views, and we can read the exact same article, and he only seems to see them from his right view. So how do you, even if you're trying to mix up your diet, how would you suggest changing your view or not having a view before you even begin reading?
To me, it's like that stuff is sort of like choosing between fried chicken and ice cream. It's all very highly processed, and a lot of it is, especially on the sort of editorial pages, it's all generated to, you know, be persuasive, but not necessarily to inform you. I'd eliminate both the Huffington Post and, you know, the back pages of the Wall Street Journal from your information diets altogether, and focus really on, you know, what. Let's say you want to talk about the first thing I'd say is go local. So stop paying attention nearly as much to the national news as you are your local issues. I mean, I even say to sports fans, like, you know, during the Super Bowl, stop worrying about whether or not the Pats are going to win or the Giants are going to win, and like go to a local high school football game. They're actually much better and a lot more fun. And you get to, like, you know, participate in your local community with people that are from where you are, and meet new interesting people. Which I think is socially more meaningful. But I think, you know, there's no you can't persuade people with facts. And the information diet actually talks a lot about this, that facts are actually really hard really bad at changing minds. I learned this the hard way with my Uncle Warren when I came home for Thanksgiving after the Dean campaign and had a list of why George W. Bush was the worst person that had ever lived, and they were all what I would consider to be facts. And the problem was is that he came with his own facts. There's never been a time in my professional political career where I've had a discussion with anybody, with any Republican being a Democrat, and had them end that conversation with, you know what, I've decided to switch parties. That has never, ever happened in my life. Instead, what I think we all need to do is sort of, you know, take it down a notch and focus more on the data. I left Blue State Digital, the company I founded, in 2008, which actually was a poor financial decision on my part. But I left in 2008 during the Iowa caucuses of 2008, before Barack Obama was even the nominee. And it was because I wanted to focus more on the facts and on getting data out. So I went to this other organization called the Sunlight Foundation, and their entire job there is to just open up government data. And if people, I strongly believe, I have faith in the American people, that if all the facts are out there, and if all the stories are there to be told, and we know everything, then people will start making rational decisions. But because all the facts can't be out there, and we get those facts through highly processed sources, it doesn't work. Especially because those facts are competing with sensational journalism. You can't. The problem is that an FEC expenditure report can't compete with Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck is far more interesting, unless you convince people that an FEC expenditure report is part of a healthy information diet, and Glenn Beck and Keith Olbermann are not.
Well, it's interesting when you talk about Sunlight Foundation, because it really is, it's almost, to carry this food metaphor, it's like choosing to cook your own food at home rather than pick it up at a restaurant or something. It's a lot more work to go seek out the facts.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely a lot more work. The thing that the internet provides is the temptation of breadth of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
I was just looking at a news article about, my wife is 4.5 months pregnant.
Congratulations.
Our first kid, so I'm super excited. But I was just reading, you know, a news article or an article on babycenter.com about, you know, what's going on in the 22nd week of pregnancy. And, it's cool, but I'm not an obstetrician now. but with politics, it seems to me like we read this stuff and we do think that we're obstetricians after reading a news article or whatever. But the interesting thing is that there's a lot of nuance that happens in Washington. Daily Kos is not going to make you an effective legislator or a good member of Congress, or actually give you an idea of what actually is happening in Washington. And the reason why I wrote The Information Diet is because the most dangerous special interest that we have now in America isn't the tobacco industry or big pharma or the liberal billionaires trying to buy everybody off in a vast left-wing conspiracy. It's an American public that's become so disconnected from the levers of power in Washington that it can't get anything done anymore. And the only way that we can solve that is by actively discounting what the large national news outlets are providing to us, and instead go straight to the source and make our media consumption a health issue rather than just a productivity issue.
So if we want to consume media deliberately, one of the first things that you suggest we do is start a journal to get a handle on exactly how much and what we are consuming. And I guess to the same extent that a food journal can shock people, it's surprising for people to really see in front of them in black and white every source of information that is part of their average day.
Yeah, and when I'm saying, you know, your information consumption, I'm only saying the stuff that you have direct control over, right? So what I don't want you to do is drive down the highway, stop your car in front of every billboard, and, you know, sort of mark that down. But rather, and I don't want you to, you know, log every conversation that you have with a friend either. But it's that stuff that you're doing alone. Anything that has a switch, anything that you have to pick up, anything that has a page or a plug, those are usually the things that you're actively consuming, proactively consuming in terms of information. And yeah, it is shocking. On the computer, on the internet, there's actually some stuff that will track that stuff for you. A service called RescueTime.com, for instance, measures everything that you've got coming in and then reports back to you on, you know, how productive. They do it still through the lens of productivity rather than through the lens of health, but how healthy your information diet is every week on the computer. Then offline, I say, yeah, keep a notebook and mark down what it is that you're taking, what you're taking, and make some taking in and make some decisions. The idea that the information that you consume has consequences that you're in direct control over is crazy. It's like saying that you can steer that ice cream straight onto your thighs, and that old expression. You can't do that. The same thing's happening with information.
Is there room for a little junk in a healthy information diet?
Sure. Is there room for a little ice cream in a food diet? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole chapter in my book dedicated to having a healthy sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
A healthy sense of humor is so important to an information diet, because it's not only is it just good for your health and good for your brain, there's just tons of health benefits to laughing, but it also helps you identify where your trouble spots are, where maybe you're becoming overly biased. If you can't laugh at something, then maybe the information has more power over you than you have over it. And that I think is we watch our Republican candidates sort of make jokes. There's an article in the New York Times this Sunday about the four remaining Republican candidates left in their senses of humor. But we need to be laughing with each other on both sides of the coin, because if we can't laugh at each other or with each other, then what are we doing? then this, all this stuff is taken a little bit too seriously for my taste.
Clay A. Johnson is with us. We're talking about his new book, The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. We'll take more of your calls and emails after the break. The number is 1-800-933-5372. The email address is think@kera.org. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour to Clay A. Johnson, author of The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Our telephone number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Let's speak next with Shelley in Flower Mound. Hey, Shelley.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling about my dad, who has been retired for about 10 years, and I can't wait to read the book because it reminds me of the scenario that I feel like we're in right now. I feel like he used to be kind of a worldly guy and had a lot of people around him in the corporate world and ideas around him, and since he's retired, that has kind of shrunken and narrowed. And I feel like now that he's home, he gets a lot of opportunities to watch Fox News whenever he wants to, or surf the internet whenever he wants to, and all of that has kind of shrunken his views. And I mean, I realize this isn't media, but to the point where he's now the guy that's forwarding the kind of urban legend emails to people and has just become very sort of small in his views. And I'm wondering what your guest's opinion is of kind of the effects of aging and your circle getting smaller, and if me saying anything could possibly have any effect on that.
Thanks for your call. What do you think, Clay?
Well, I mean, first we have to, sort of frame the question that, one person's smaller views could be another person's focused views, right? And so I don't know your dad. I don't know anything much about him. But I think it's really important that we don't frame his views as small or big or lesser or greater. Rather, This isn't about, you know, the interesting thing about The Information Diet is that it's really a nonpartisan book. I mean, I never thought I'd write a book that gave props to Karl Rove, but the book actually praises Karl Rove.
I will say it reads very much down the line, despite your background.
I worked I worked on Howard Dean's campaign and all that stuff. So this, praising Karl Rove is a little much for me. But the interesting thing here is you've got to step away from the partisan stuff and make this about intake, right? So this isn't about you're watching too much Fox News. This is about why don't you decrease that and pay a little bit more attention to local news, what's going on in your local area. And then it becomes something that's not about partisanship.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, Dad, I want you to watch less conservative news and watch more liberal news, but rather you're talking about health. Dad, I think this stuff might be causing you to get a little too tense. I'm worried about your health. So instead of looking at some TV, why don't we read this great book called The Information Diet? Or why don't we take a look at what's happening in our local community and talk to some neighbors, that kind of thing. The idea here is if you're ever challenging someone's political views, you're never going to win. You know, the amygdala in your brain becomes activated, and you get a fight-flight response where the person either wants to argue with you or run away. But if you talk about it in terms of a genuine concern, genuine, non-manipulative health concern of, one case I make in The Information Diet is that when you're watching a lot of news, when you're consuming that 11 hours of information a day that you are, you're sitting down. And sitting down is as bad for you as smoking. Sitting down kills you. Sitting down for too often kills you, obviously. You can sit sometimes. I don't sleep standing up. But if you make it about health, I think you'll go a lot farther.
What does it take to develop and maintain a taste for the kind of information that either we find not palatable based on our own personal views, or we just find more difficult to consume than lighter stuff, than political gossip, than entertainment?
Well, you know, I'm not asking people to sort of, you know, I'm not asking Fox News viewers to tune into MSNBC and balance it out nearly as much as I am saying, look, you know, shut them both off.
Mm-hmm.
Consume low on the information food chain instead. It's hard. I call it, to an extent, being an info-vegan, veganism is really about eating low on the food chain. Now, they might eat some highly processed foods, but you generally know with a vegan where your food is coming from, and how it's being delivered to you. Now, I am not a vegan. The most dangerous place in Washington, D.C. is between me and a chicken wing, as far as I'm concerned. And it would be a huge challenge for me to be a vegan. However, now that I got a kid on the way, you know, I'm definitely eating a more plant-based diet, a lot less meat, and trying to make it so that I live longer so I can enjoy hanging out with my kid whenever he pops out in a few months now. I think the same thing goes with information. You know, being an info vegan and looking at spreadsheets all day to tell the facts isn't going to be for everybody. That's generally for the analysts and programmers. But getting close to the source and also demanding from media that they sort of show their work, that they not only provide you with a story but tell you how they made the story and tell you the ingredients of the story that they're providing for you. Those two things would go a long way towards a healthy information diet.
Back to the phones now at 1-800-933-5372. Let's speak with Holly in Arlington. Hello, Holly.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually just had a comment about the quote-unquote conspiracy that the media is handing us a bunch of tripe to dumb down the public, because I actually had that thought about 6 months ago when I returned to NPR. I was listening to the morning radio fluff and junk, and I just felt like I was losing brain cells because it was so stupid and it was information that I just did not care about. But I came back to NPR because it's so much more intelligent, and I don't feel like I'm just killing my brain in the process.
Thanks so much for your call.
The one reason behind that is because NPR isn't looking to sell advertisements for every particular show. You know, every piece of content, the job of every piece of commercial content out there isn't to inform you. It's to sell you advertisements. That's how they make money. And, you know, this is the thing that I actually say in the book, one easy way to go on an information diet that's great is to just stop consuming advertisements. Like, just try your hardest to eliminate advertisements from your life. Cut cable so that you're not watching cable television at all anymore. Get your television fix from services like Netflix or Hulu or iTunes, and start watching a lot less advertising. I did this 3 or 4 years ago. And then actually, because of the book, you need a landline to do radio interviews. And the cheapest way for me to get a landline in my house was actually to get a cable subscription, which I found really ironic. The information diet, the book, has actually ruined my information diet. But now I have cable in my house, and so I turned on cable for the first time in like 4 years, and it's terrible. The advertisements are terrible. And I think if you just start cutting down on advertisements and go towards an all internet approach to consuming even entertainment television, then you're on the right track. But the advertising focused media is really wrecking itself.
I guess even a DVR is sort of like a pedometer in terms of measuring your activity.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, you can use, I mean, there's all kinds of tools out there. The point is just to consume deliberately and to realize that this is something that your consumption is having all kinds of consequences. It's having consequences on your own health. It's having consequences on your community's health. And it's having consequences on your nation's health, that your individual consumption is having an impact.
I've got an email here from Paul in Terrell who writes, I've discovered the first universal law of everything is that it's not that simple. I try, not always successfully, to remind myself that it's not that simple when I hear a pundit I agree with. What an interesting way to look at it.
It is, and that's a really, really, oh man, I'm glad he mentioned that. That's a really good point, because that's the lesson I learned in 10 years of Washington. Hmm. I went to Washington because my mom got breast cancer, and her health insurance went from $300 a month to $3,000 a month. So like any young 20-something, I found myself with my Volkswagen. There was no yoga mat in the back, but I did find myself in a Volkswagen driving to Vermont to work mm-hmm. for Howard Dean. And, every issue that I've ever faced in Washington, whether it be health care of saying, you know, we should just have single-payer health care, or lobbyists is just saying, like, we should just eliminate lobbying, it's not that simple. The government is big and it's complicated and it's messy. National politics is big, it's complicated and it's messy. And anytime anyone has a simple answer to something, it's generally just wrong.
Hmm.
When you look at lobbying, for instance, you know, you can't restrict lobbying without restricting the First Amendment. Hmm. It's complicated.
Do you find, has it been easy for you to sustain your media diet over time?
It's a challenge, the benefits that I get from sustaining a strong information diet, a healthy information diet, are greatly outweigh the struggle of keeping it, of resisting when someone on Twitter sends me a link of a two-faced cat on the Huffington Post or something like that, which I really did want to click on that link. It took a lot to resist that. It's as much as, you know, someone putting a hot brownie sundae in front of me. I have a stronger relationship with my wife. I have a longer attention span. One interesting thing is I got to write a book. You know, I went on an information diet and then wrote a book about it. A critical part of keeping a healthy information diet is producing, that writing or some form of thought production writing or video production or however you want to do it, is as important to clarifying your thoughts as intake is.
Yeah, you know, I will admit that I'm biased here based on my line of work, but it does seem that there's nothing that makes you more mindful about the media than producing something that you put out there for other people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wish I could have gone through these radio interviews and television interviews and blog interviews and newspaper interviews before I wrote the book. I'm much more well-versed about my book now than I was when I wrote it. I'm much more thoughtful about my views now than I was when I wrote it. And, you know, it's a shame that you have to write and publish a book before you can, you know, really start getting questions on it. Because if I had to rewrite the information diet today, it would be twice as good as the book that's on the shelves. That's not to say that you shouldn't buy it. You should buy multiple copies. But, you know, it's amazing what putting yourself out there and answering questions about your work does for your own views. I've changed my mind a lot on a lot of things that are even in the book.
We haven't really talked much, Clay, about art, and I'm curious about where you see that fitting into or maybe overlaying on top of a healthful media diet.
You know, art's a struggle for me, and it's not a struggle for me because I don't like art or anything like that, but because art is so much about, you know, individual taste and description. You know, it's very hard to figure out what art is. Is art me singing in the shower? Is art going to a museum? I don't know. But I know that some form of recreational information intake is important. And I know that we tend to be a nation of over-consumers of really bad stuff. It's as though we all have milkshake taps installed in our sinks, and we're only sipping out of the milkshake taps instead of the water tap. One way to go on an information diet is just to trim down on the number of milkshakes you have per day, to extend this very strange metaphor. But another way to do it is to drink more water.
Mm-hmm.
I think both are equally as effective. The point, again, is quality over quantity.
We just have about 30 seconds left, but have you been interested in whatever echo chamber might have been produced following the publication of this book in terms of people discussing
it's actually,
it?
Actually, I'm giving a presentation at the Tools of Change conference next week about how the information diet has ruined my own information diet, because I find myself tuned into Twitter to listen to what people are saying about the information diet all day long. And I really have to stop. I mean, it was just, my wife called me out on it a couple weeks ago. And I think it's, no one's perfect. And it takes a lot of hard work, rigorous work, to stay on a strong information diet. But again, the benefits outweigh the consequences.
The new book by Clay Johnson is called The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. Clay, it's been really interesting to talk to you. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
It's been a pleasure, Chris. I really appreciate it.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. And our senior producer is Jeff Whittington. Learn more about Think, find out about upcoming programs, and download our free daily podcast at kera.org/think. Email any comments, questions, or suggestions to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.